Notice the change just now. There's a lot of rustling to settle down. Now that we are settled down, things are a lot quieter. And you can hear the subtle things you couldn't hear when everybody was rustling, moving around. It's a good image for the mind as it settles down. It's only when the mind gets really quiet and in place that you can see its subtle movements, see what they're made of, where they go. This is one of the reasons why we practice concentration and try to get really good at it, so we can sense the subtle things going on in the mind, see where they drive us, what they do. And then what we're going to do about them, how we want to handle them, which things we want to hold on to, which things we want to put aside, which things we want to develop. The main things to develop, of course, are the path. That's the basic image in the Buddha's teachings. It's what the one he starts out with. It's the one he ends with. He starts his first sermon by saying, there is this path that picks its way between two extremes, avoids the two extremes. It's not like it's on a halfway mark in a continuum. It's actually off the continuum entirely. And the two extremes are the pursuit of pleasure, and the other is weighing yourself down with pain. And the path that we're following is not just sort of a halfway splitting the difference. We're not pursuing either sensual pleasure or pursuing pain. We're going to use these things. We're going to use pleasure and we're going to use pain for something else entirely. The ultimate happiness. But it's the path that gets us there, and that's the image the Buddha uses. When he taught his last disciple, Supada. Again, he used the image of the path. Supada had asked them, everybody in the world who claims to be enlightened, are they all enlightened, or only some of them, or none of them? And the Buddha says, put that aside. I'll teach you the Dharma. And then it goes on to say, any teaching that has the Eightfold Path will have people who are awakened. And it's one of those rare cases, though, where having put a question aside, he actually answers it. He says, only in this teaching you're going to find this path. So this is the basic image for all the teachings, even his teachings of right view. When he sets out how we're supposed to understand things, we understand things for the purpose of putting an end to suffering. He doesn't talk about what the real nature of things is in and of themselves, whether they have a real nature or don't have a real nature. But he says you learn to look at things in this way, and this will lead you to the end of suffering. And so as we follow this path, it's good to think about some of the implications of being on the path. So the main one is that it leads to a goal. We are going someplace. Sometimes you hear the idea that the path is the goal. But everything the Buddha taught suggests that they're radically different. The path is something you do, something you develop. The goal is something you realize, and then you have the end of all duties, the Four Noble Truths. Each of the truths has a duty. And the third truth, which is the realization of nirvana, it's something you realize, but then from that point on there's nothing you have to do with it or do for it. It's there. But the path is something you've got to develop. There are activities. The end of the path involves the end of desire, the end of hunger. But while you're in the path, you've got to have the desire to follow the path. You've got to figure things out. You've got to think things through. You have to work on your energy. All these things you've got to develop. So there really are two radically different things. The path is something fabricated. The goal is unfabricated. The path doesn't cause the goal. It takes you there. A traditional image is of the road leading to a mountain. the road doesn't cause the mountain, and the road doesn't look like the mountain at all. And the road doesn't take you there. You have to follow the road. It's your actions that are going to get you there. Once you're there, you don't have to do anything more. But while you're on your way, you do have to work on things. You have to develop the strength to stick with the path. So sometimes it's good to remind yourself, this is a noble path. As the Buddha said, it's the Ardha Magga. Ardha meaning noble. Qualities we're developing in the path are all good qualities, honorable qualities. We're not here just for pleasure, regardless of the consequences. We realize that our actions have consequences. And so we want to behave in a responsible way so that our pursuit of happiness doesn't harm anybody, doesn't harm ourselves, doesn't harm other people. That's what makes the path noble. Years back, I was asked to write a review of a book on positive psychology. And the magazine that asked me to do it said, well, try to take a Buddhist look at it from a Buddhist perspective. And the editors were surprised, they said, that I had chosen the perspective of karma. In other words, in our pursuit of happiness, we have to think about what the consequences are. How is this pursuit going to have an impact on other people? How is it going to have an impact on ourselves? And even though this was a Buddhist magazine, they said that perspective had never occurred to them. They were expecting something more like emptiness or whatever. But it's the teachings on karma that form the beginning of the path, the realization that your actions do have consequences. The path itself is a kind of karma. The Buddha said it's the karma that puts an end to karma, but you've got to do it. And you look at the consequences of what you're doing. We had the list just now in the chat we did, from right view all the way down to right concentration. They're all good qualities that we're working on. Abandoning unskillful behavior. Developing the powers of our mind so that we're clear and observant, truthful. The mind is focused, can get a sense of rapture from within that doesn't have to take anything away from anybody else. Our resolves are all good resolves when we're on the path. Resolve not to be led around by the nose for sensual desires. Resolve not to harm anybody, not to wish any ill will for anybody. These are all noble things. Regardless of how people treat us, as the Buddha said, even if bandits were to savagely cut off your limbs with a two-handled saw, we're still supposed to start focusing on them with thoughts of goodwill, and from there spreading goodwill for the whole cosmos. In other words, even in a case like that, we're not supposed to wish ill for anybody. So it's a noble path, and it's a good thing to take pride in the fact that you're on this path. When the Buddha was teaching Rahula, he said, when you notice that you actually have done something skillful, your thoughts, your words, or your deeds have not harmed anybody at all, have been conducive to the well-being of yourself and others, you should take joy in that fact. Because it's not a small thing to develop that kind of skill. So as we work on concentration, it's not just a matter of the techniques of getting the mind centered, but it's also a matter of the values that allow the mind to get centered as well. The realization you're not harming anybody. You're developing your inner resources in a way that actually is helpful to others. In some teachings, they make a sharp distinction between a path that's focused on your own well-being and a path that's focused on the well-being of others. But as the Buddha pointed out, when you're really developing mindfulness, developing concentration. You realize that you cannot harm anybody if you want to develop these qualities of mind. It starts even with a simple observation that if you're stingy, you can't develop these qualities of mind. If you go around harming people, you've got to deal with the denial or the remorse. And that's not conducive to getting the mind still either. So it's not the case that you can forget about the rest of humanity and just pursue your own well-being selfishly. The pursuit of your own true well-being involves considering the well-being of others, being generous where you feel inclined to be generous, where you feel inspired, and making the promise to yourself that under no conditions are you going to harm anybody. As the Buddha said, this is a gift of unlimited safety. There's that verse in the Gardaniya Metta Sutta where the Buddha said that just as a mother would protect her only child, you try to protect your attitude of goodwill. He says, as she would risk her life for her only child, you protect your attitude of goodwill. Now, this doesn't mean you're going to go out and cherish everybody the same way that she would cherish her child. Fight off every injustice that's going to happen to everybody. You die before you can complete that mission. The Buddha says the way you give protection to everybody is to make sure your precepts are pure. You make a promise to yourself. You're not going to harm anybody under any conditions. You're not going to kill anybody, steal anything, have illicit sex with anybody, lie to anybody, take intoxicants in any situations. And the fact that you are making that clear-cut promise to yourself and that there are no exceptions, that's what gives universal protection. So it's by focusing on the quality of your goodwill and making sure there's no exceptions in your goodwill. That's how you nourish those precepts. So that's what we have to look after, as a mother would look after her child. We look after the attitudes of the mind, our resolve not to harm anybody. That's a noble resolve. So this is not a selfish path at all. In fact, one of the motivations for following it all the way to the end is that when you've completed the path, any gift that's given to you will bear extreme fruit for those who give it. This is your expression of gratitude for all those who've helped you, that you want to make sure that they enjoy the fruits of their generosity many, many times over. There's no place at all in the canon where the Buddha says you practice the path selfishly or just don't worry about others, just go for your own well-being. It's impossible. He gives the image of acrobats. One acrobat is standing on the shoulders of another. And the one on the bottom says, okay, you look out after me and I'll look out after you, and that way we'll both come down safely. And the assistant says, no, that's not going to work. I'll look after myself. You look after yourself, but in doing so, we'll be protecting each other. The happiness that comes from virtue, generosity, meditation, is not a happiness that has clear boundaries. And your practice is bound to have a good influence on other people. The best influence, of course, that it can have is to inspire them to practice as well. Because this is the part where each of us is responsible for ourselves, and we can't go out and save other beings. Because we realize that we're suffering from our own lack of skill, and so we have to develop that skill. You can't make others skillful. You can provide them with an example and give advice. But for the actual care and attention, mindfulness, alertness, all the other qualities that are needed to develop that skill, that's something that they will have to stir up from within. But we ourselves have the example of the Buddha. As he said, if it weren't for him, nobody would be following the Eightfold Path. So the fact that he provides that example, this is possible for human beings to do this. That's the gift we give to one another as we practice. So it's good to take joy in the fact that we are on a noble path. We're developing noble qualities as we follow the path. The goodness of the path is not safe at the end, as the Buddha says. It's good in the beginning, good in the middle, good in the end. As with any path, there are going to be difficulties along the way. We never promised that it would be easy. But it's always good. That's why it's worth sticking with. As he said, even if tears are running down your cheeks, you still stick with the practice. Because you are on a path that goes someplace really good. And you don't want to sacrifice that for the fleeting pleasures that would come from straying off the path for a while. So keep reminding yourself how rare it is that you can follow a path that it's as noble as this one. And keep on walking.